My name is Scott Harris. Welcome to the Dairy Dive. Today, we're going to run it back. So buckle up, because we're diving deep.
First of all, we hope we can try to educate you so you learn just a little bit,
My whole life's been dairy farming. Some days you wonder why you ever milk cows.
It's kind of just in the blood around here. I don't know what it is, but we like livestock.
Buckle up. The Dairy Dive starts now.
So welcome to the podcast, and you'll notice if you're a regular listener that it's a little different format for this episode. We're not going to actually have a guest. We're actually going to have three guests, kind of, previous guests, that is, previous episodes, in fact. We're going to actually highlight three episodes from our past. We've been doing this a while now. We're up over 100 episodes, and so I think there's some really good previous material that's still extremely relevant that we wanted to kind of recycle and kind of highlight and hit on. For those of you maybe new to the podcast and you've never taken the time to kind of click on the see all button on your whatever platform you're using and actually go back and look at some of those previous episodes. And so we're going to highlight three different ones that I think still have a ton of value and were some of the best guests that we had. Actually, two of them I believe we've had on twice. And so just thought it'd be really good to do that. And so the first one that we're going to actually take a look at is an episode where we had Steve Massey with Renaissance Nutrition. They are a nutrition company based in Roaring Springs, Pennsylvania. Steve himself works with dairies across the entire country. I know he spends a lot of time in the southeast of Florida. I think he goes as far west as you can go. I think he's all over the place. And Steve did a really nice job of talking about the nutritional value and converting some of the nutrition components of corn silage to dollars. And so, you know, for example, if you talk about dry matter at 35%, that's about 700 pounds of dry matter on average. Crude protein at 7.5% is about 52 pounds of protein. In other words, and what he's able to do, and you'll see this or hear this at least in the podcast, is he's able to take, if I was going to have to buy that protein, how much would it cost me? And assigning that value. And so and his point to a lot of his customers, his dairy clients, is why are we spending so much money, more money than what we have to, on some of these components when we really just need to grow more or better corn silage? And so take a listen to some of these clips from our time with Steve, and hopefully you'll get some great value. And I definitely recommend you go back and listen to the entire episode. And Steve, are you sitting here trying to tell me that not all starch is created equal, that there is a difference in digestibility in starch?
Yeah, and unfortunately, Scott, that's really the case. That, you know, take for example, if I walk onto your farm and I said, well, here's a 32% starch diet, and your first reaction would be that, well, gosh, you're going to kill my cows. But then if I come back and say, well, it's all shelled corn is the only starch source in this diet, and you're going to look at me and say, well, you big idiot, that's all going to pass through the cows and end up in the manure. I'm not going to make any milk on that. But it's a 32% starch diet. And so we really have to look at what's going on with that starch. We know that the starch that ferments in the rumen is going to be a huge driver of milk production. And so we're looking for those floury varieties that have got a very high starch in vitro digestion number. And so we can drive more milk production and get less into the hindgut and even less into the fecal starch.
Absolutely. And you see that from a anecdotal standpoint, even if you just want to go out and look at manure, but you also can see it from just a there's starch calculators out there that you can access and see how much it's actually costing you. So as we look at cost, let's go into kind of assigning a cost to each of those nutrients that we kind of talked through. So what are we looking at from assigning cost, Steve?
Yeah. So I guess I'll explain really quick how we come up with a cost for each one of these nutrients. Let's pick on protein here for a second. 48 B-meal currently is about $5.50 a ton out in the countryside today. Obviously, there's 2,000 pounds of bean meal in a ton, but again, we need to squeeze the water out of that. So there's 1,760 pounds of dry matter in that ton of corn, soybean meal. Soybean meal runs around 52.5% protein on a dry matter basis. So that's 924 pounds of protein in that ton of soybean meal. So if we take our current cost of $5.50 and divide it by that 924 pounds of protein in there, we come up with a cost per unit of protein, which is just under 60 cents today.
That's a pretty good example. And so now, and that's a soybean meal at the current cost. I'm going to ask a question. We kind of off script a little bit. Does that soybean meal cost fluctuate quite a bit? Where is it in relation to currently to normal standards? Is it high, low, normal?
Oh, very high today. Yeah, it's very high today. Normally, soybean meal is going to be in that 350 to 400 range. And so with the amount of soybean meal that China is buying from the United States to feed all their pigs and chickens, that's just got the soybean meal price just through the roof right now.
Yeah. Makes sense. And then, so if we were going to look at like a cost per pound of the nutrient, what would we want to look at most importantly?
On protein, about 60 cents per unit of protein.
Yes, 60 cents. And then, so if you would look at like starch, do you know an equation we could look at for the starch side as well?
Yeah.
Kind of where we would be looking at for
so it? If we're 60 cents and kind of doing the same calculations for like fermentable starch, and let's just use U.S. shelled corn at $6.50 a bushel. Let's say that it says 75% in vitro starch digestion number. So that would make fermentable starch about 25 cents per pound of fermentable starch as a nutrient cost. We get more into the fiber. We use soy hulls to make that calculation. Soy hulls are currently $3.04 a ton. They're 66% NDF, and 90% of that is digestible. So that would put us about 29 cents per unit per pound of digestible fiber. And then if we just use the standard biophos, 21% phosphorus mineral that's currently at a little over $1,100 a ton, 21.5% of that is phosphorus. That puts phosphorus at $2.80 a pound. So a very expensive ingredient that we're feeding our cows.
So the second episode that I wanted to highlight for you was an episode that we did with Talia Danzinger with VAS. And Talia was has I believe been on twice. Talia did such a good job, and kind of looking at kind of the main point was diving into data. You know, we find so many dairymen and dairy individuals that we work with, they're either one or the other. They're really heavy data driven or not at all. But the value of evaluating your data and knowing what's going on in your farm is so important. You know, Talia specifically talks about calculating your ROI and the importance of that, and knowing what we're actually spending and what we're actually getting back out of some of these things, bringing it all together, implementation. And so she does a really nice job of tying all that stuff together, no matter what your interest level of data is or not. She brings to light some really great information that you're going to want to tune into. So listen to a few clips from what Talia talks about, but also, again, encourage you to go listen to the entire episode. So in your article that I had read, kind of your summary statement that I thought was really good and kind of really brings it all, kind of great place to start. It says that, basically bringing data to the center of your decision-making process can help you find the best solution for your herd and business. So what do you mean by that?
Sure. So when we say data, I think people really think about things like milk production or a somatic cell. We're going to make a decision on an individual cow. But we can use data in a lot of different ways that's really transformative to how we manage our dairies. Data should be considered to be on the feed aspect. So what are our refusals looking like? What are our mixing errors? It should be things like, how much labor do we use on the farm? Is that acceptable for our farm size? We need to be using data to compare ourselves not only to other farms of our size in the industry, but also our past performance. Where have we been and where do we want to go in the future? So when we consider all of those different data points and bring them together, if we truly listen to the cows, what they're telling us, and look at the path that we want to go down as a dairy as we plan for our future, I think we can make those really informed decisions that help us be the next dairy of the future.
That's good. So you mentioned something really good there that you also talk about in the article. That's listen to data and cows. So what do you mean by that exactly as far as data and cows? Because I think that's maybe a fear, right, for some dairies that you this is obviously your area of expertise. But I would think some dairies would feel that if they're too data focused, maybe they're not going to really be able to make the decision on the cows. And most dairymen provide, you know, really take pride in the fact that they know their cows well and they listen to their cows and how the cows respond. But there's an element here of listening to both, I'm guessing.
Yes. I'm really glad that you bring that up. I think a lot of people, well, most farmers are in the business because we truly love cows. We love being cowside. We love taking care of our cows, our crops, our farms, the land. And so when you are somebody who is really hands-on with that aspect of the farm, data can seem a little bit intimidating. And all of the parts of our farm, whether that would be our fields or our cows themselves, are creating data points all the time. Every day, a cow is creating data points in the milk that she produces, her somatic cell, whether or not she's pregnant, what lactation she is. So we're getting tons of different data points on that cow, and it's the responsibility of our herd management software to collect and store that data for us. Probably gone are the days where we could really do this via paper and have a really good grasp on our farm. So we need to consider those data points that those cows are producing, but also those data points that could inform what direction our herd is headed. A really great example of this is fatty acid data in our cows. Oftentimes, we can tell from the fatty acids that cow puts into the fat in her milk how her rumen is functioning and what direction she's going to go tomorrow, whether her milk production is going to go up and down. So our cows are constantly trying to give us feedback on how we are doing as managers. It's just whether or not we know how to pick up on the messages that they're sending us in the data versus looking at that cow and saying, you know, she's not so bright-eyed today. I think I need to go check her temperature or do something along those lines.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think that that's a really great point. It seems like it would be able to, I mean, I think that if you're a good cow person, you're a good cow person. I don't know that, data is not going to make that worse. It's only going to make it better because you're going to be able to make those tie-ins. And then the data is going to probably most of the time support what you think was going on. But, you know, maybe take a little bit of guesswork out of some of it, I think would be an occurrence that would go on with dairies in this kind of a situation.
Yes, for sure. And we're starting to get data in on our cows that goes beyond what we can just look at some raw data and make a decision when we consider the data coming in from our activity monitoring systems and how we can use that data in context with when that cow freshened, when we bred her last, whether or not she is on our do not breed or cull list. We just can't be responsible for taking all that information into our own brain and crunching those numbers and making that decision. We really need to consider the different tools that we have in the industry to aggregate that data and to get some insights from it. We can make so much more informed decisions now with the technology that we have.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's wonderful because we want to get better. I mean, we all want to get better, and this is part of doing that. So one of the things you had mentioned too, in your article, is talking about exploring your options. And so what does a farm need to ask themselves when it comes to this?
Yeah, I think it's really important to explore our pain points. And we also have to be careful not to get too wrapped up in what's the next big thing in the industry. It could be that there's a new technology coming out and lots of farms are adopting it, but that doesn't mean it's the right fit for our dairy. So really examining a couple key pieces here. Our internal goals, where do we want to be as a dairy? Not every dairy's goals look the same. Some dairies are going to have really big goals on milk production based on their milk market, and other farms might have bigger goals on components or milk quality or genetics, depending on what the market for those animals look like. Even just considering that goal first as we make some of these technology decisions is so important to highlight the right path for this dairy. It's not the same for every dairy.
The third podcast that I wanted to recommend is the oldest of all the three that we talk about. on this podcast, and it was actually very early on to my coming back to within the fold within Master Choice and Rob Seco. And it's a podcast episode 68. It's with Bruce Van Steeg, and it's called What Does Winning Look Like? And Bruce has the opportunity to work. He works, if I remember right, specifically within ag, but a lot of his principles would be very applicable for any industry, quite honestly. But, Bruce talks a lot about, but the one that sticks out to me the most was he talked about meetings. I work with a lot of dairies of different sizes, different parts of the country. I know there's a lot of them that they really don't have that many meetings, at least with their lower, with the milkers, or maybe the people that are just feeding. Maybe they have upper management kind of meetings, but they're not meeting with their employees regularly. And he talked about the value of that. But then again, also don't have meetings just to have a meeting. You know, make sure there's actually purpose and value and to drive to what you're working toward. But he goes over a few other different things. That's just some really sound management / just important things for us to think about if we're doing any kind of farm management, but really if you're doing any kind of personal management and growth and wanting to get better. So take a listen to what Bruce has to say, some clips from the episode that he was in with us. Some of the stuff you're bringing up, I think a lot of dairies struggle with the business side of their business. And it's becoming more and more of an issue and something they need to be looking at. So let's jump in here. So one of your first points is the results and the business organization structure. Give me just a few highlights of what you're referring to there.
So it kind of comes back to what winning looks like. What are the outcomes you're looking for? That's kind of the results, right? And results can be has a couple different meanings, but in this case, it's what are the results that you're looking for? And once you kind of can determine that, right, then that feeds into, okay, what's your mission statement? What are your core values? Because that's what's important to you. And I really don't get any further with most clients unless they know those things. Because otherwise, we're just kind of fixing things, right? We don't really ever get at the real issue and really where they want to go. So once you know those pieces, then you look at their organization and you take a look and you say, okay, well, what's the structure now? And most dairy farms are what I call very flat structure. One guy in charge and everybody reports to them. So when they don't have anything to do, what do they ask? What do I do now? What do I do now? Well, you can only handle so many what do I do nows in a day before you do what a lot of business owners do, and they run to town to get parts. They spend a lot of time on a tractor, right? They don't want to be engaged with their people and they don't know how to get it rolling. And so it takes some sort of structure because people are looking for clarity. Owners are looking for clarity. Where do I want to go? Employees are going, what do you want me to go do? What are your expectations of me? And so you need a structure. It doesn't have to be like real hierarchical. It can be fairly flat, or it can be more. It just depends on you and your style, how engaged you want to be in your business. Do you want to be a little less engaged? And so those are all things we have to determine, you know, as we walk into this process to go, what is it going to look like? What fits your style of management? Or how do you need to grow in your style of management so that your company can be unleashed and go to where you want it to go? And those are two kind of foundational pieces that we need to know before we get in the meat of everything else.
Yeah, so I bet you would find a lot of dairies, at least your mid to smaller size dairies, where the owner doesn't know business side necessarily at all, but they love cows. They love being the guy out. You know, they'll drive the newer truck. They just love doing that stuff. And I think your point is so good in the aspect of that's fine. If that's the structure you want, that's fine. But let's have a structure. Let's make sure everybody on this team knows how this organization operates. Fair enough.
Yeah. Because it's funny. Sometimes we want something, but we want it all one way. And life just doesn't work that way. Right. If you want to have a bigger business and generate more income, you know, milk more cows because you love cows. Well, then you have to have employees. Like, well, I'll go and use robots. Well, fine, you can use robots, but then the dairy service company has to have more employees. Somebody's going to have more, or you have to milk a certain number of cows. So that's the trade-off. You want to milk more cows, you get more employees. Right.
And so, that brings up a great point. And to your second point is talking about employees, you ask the question or make a statement, right people, right seats.
I love that comment. That's just we often we'll have a team of people, and first you see somebody's good at something. Maybe they're good at pulling calves. Maybe they're good at treating cows. And the next thing you know, you need somebody to kind of step up and do the next level of thing, which usually involves supervising some people. So we just go, hey, Bob's really good at this. Let's make him this new supervisor guy. And he has no experience leading people, no experience managing people. And those two things are very different. And so now we've just elevated him to his level of incompetence. And he's in the wrong, you know, he's the wrong seat. He may be a good, so right, you know, the whole concept of right people, that's people who understand and believe and buy into your core values. Because if we're working with people who don't have the same core values, you're not going to enjoy working with them.
Right. You've not only hurt your organization, you've hurt Bob. You've put him in the wrong spot.
Put him in the wrong spot. So the first thing I always tell you, you know, because we don't typically hire well, especially in the last several years as labor has gotten tighter and it's, you know, it's even harder now. And so I've heard a lot of comments from dairymen. Hey, if they pull up in a clean car, I'll hire them. If they just show up, I'll hire them. And no doubt we need people. And I get you got to fill open spots, but you got to fill them with the right kind of people, people who fit your organization, who fit your philosophy, because then you'll enjoy working with them. Because otherwise what happens is you don't enjoy working your own business because you don't enjoy the people you're working with.
Yeah.
And then you got to figure out what the seats are. And the little seats goes back to the organization. Once you understand what kind of organization you need, what kind of structure it is, hey, I need X number of milkers. I want milkers to function like this. I need X number of herdsmen. Herdsmen are going to be maternity. They're going to be fresh cows. They're going to be breeding. I need a guy who can feed. Well, like for me, I always tell my clients, I go, you do not want Bruce to milk cows. I can do it. I understand it. I can teach you. I will get so bored working on a rotary that I'll go nuts and I'll begin to not do a very good job because I want the heck out of there. But you put me in a situation where things are changing and there's, you know, there's movement. I can make decisions and there's challenges to take care of. I'm all over it. So you have to put me in the right place. I'll excel. And that's what we need to look at. What kind of person do we need? What's the seat we need? And then go hire to that. And that doesn't just happen overnight. It takes effort. But once you learn that recruiting, hiring, onboarding process, man, life gets a lot, lot better.
So now that you've heard clips from maybe, you know, three previous episodes, I want to encourage you to reach out. Maybe what are some other episodes you've heard that you thought were great and you'd like to maybe make a comment on? But also another ask I'm going to have for you is I always look for new topics. What are we missing? Maybe we haven't hit on a particular area that you'd like to learn more about and you want to make us do the work and dig into it a little bit instead of you doing it. So we'd love to do that. If you want to email me, it's S Harris, so SHARRIS at robseco.com. So robseco.com. And say, you know, Scott, hey, can you do a topic or do a podcast on this? Or you know of a great guest that maybe we could bring in and put on the show. Love to do that. Always looking for people to participate in that. So with all that, I leave you today. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you will go back and listen to not just those three top ones, but some of the other ones that we've put out in the past. There's some just great content out there, everybody. So with that, I hope everybody has a great day.